We've all watched the visuals from Caracas, Venezuela. American helicopters descending on the presidential palace. Delta Force operators breach the compound. Within minutes, President Nicolas Maduro, a sitting head of state, is dragged from his bedroom and flown to New York City in handcuffs. The world watches in shock. But 8,000 kilometers away in Copenhagen, Denmark, they're not just shocked. They're terrified. Let that sink in. You know why? Because just hours after Maduro's capture, Kate Miller, wife of Trump's most powerful advisor, Stephen Miller, posted a picture of Greenland covered in the American flag. One word caption: soon. And when Trump was asked if Greenland could be next, he didn't say no. But here's what nobody is telling. This isn't just about an island. It's about 4.7 billion tons of rare earth minerals. It's about America's northernmost military base. The only thing standing between the US homeland and Russian missiles. And it's about a tiny nation of 56,000 people caught between superpowers. Today, the real reasons behind Trump's Arctic obsession, why an island most people can't find on a map holds the key to everything from your smartphone to fighter jets, and why India's strategy might be the only one that makes sense in this new world. Let's get into it.
You're listening to Nelson John 360. Nelson John 360.
Hello and welcome back to Nelson John 360. I'm your host, Nelson John. This is my show where I decode the stories that shape our world. Before we get going, just a quick heads up. This is a long-form conversation. The kind where, you know, I slow things down, go deep, and really let ideas breathe. So if you're driving, walking, or just settling in with a coffee, you're in the right place. Let me tell you, you don't have to rush this episode. Pause it, come back to it. Take it at your own pace. There's a lot here, and it's meant to be enjoyed that way. All right. So before we dive into the controversy, let me make sure we understand what we're talking about. Because Greenland isn't just some random piece of ice. It's one of the most strategically important territories on Earth. Let me talk about, you know, the basics here, the size, the population and geography, so you get a better understanding. Greenland is the world's largest island. 836,000 square miles. Now, to put that into perspective, it's bigger than six Germanys combined. Or take Alaska and California. Merge them together and you've got Greenland. But here's the twist. Only 56,000 people live here. That's less than the population of a mid-sized Indian town. Most of them are concentrated in the capital region, Nuuk, and scattered along the western coast in these gorgeous, colorful houses that look straight out of a fairy tale book. Now, 81% of this island is covered in ice. But that ice is melting. So what happens? As it melts, it reveals something incredible underneath. Now, here's where things get interesting. Greenland is not an independent country. It's an autonomous territory of Denmark, which has been since the 18th century. But, and this is crucial, Greenland has been on a deliberate journey towards independence for decades. They got home rule in 1979. Then came the landmark Self-Government Act in 2009. That 2009 Act, well, it's huge. It officially is recognizing the Greenlandic people as an independent people under international law. It gave them full control over their natural resources, and it established a legal pathway for them to become a fully sovereign nation whenever they choose. So, the next question is, Why haven't they done it yet? Money. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Danish subsidies make up one third of Greenland's entire GDP. The Greenlandic government literally cannot pay its own bills without Copenhagen's money. When you look at their 2024 foreign policy strategy, beautifully titled, "Nothing About Us Without Us," lays it out clearly. They want independence. All major political parties agree on that. But they also know that they need economic self-sufficiency first. And that is why the minerals under Greenland's ice matter so much. They're not just valuable, they're Greenland's ticket to freedom. But there's a paradox. And remember this, because it's going to come back. To extract those minerals, Greenland needs foreign investment. I'm talking massive foreign investment from countries like the United States. So Greenland faces a choice: stay dependent on Denmark or potentially trade that dependency for a new one on Washington. That's the sovereignty paradox, you know, keep that in mind. You know, something started off as a joke in August 2019, Trump's first term. Suddenly, out of nowhere, he floats the idea of buying Greenland. The world laughs. Denmark's Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen, calls the idea absurd. Trump gets so offended that he cancels a state visit to Denmark over Greenland. Most people thought, okay, that's just Trump being Trump. He'll move on. He didn't move on. December 2024. Trump wins the election before he even takes charge. He's back on Greenland. And this time, the language is different. Let me quote his post on Truth Social from December 23rd, 2024. "For purposes of national security and freedom throughout the world, the United States feels that the ownership and control of Greenland is an absolute necessity." Absolute necessity. Not would be nice, not strategically useful, but absolute necessity. January 2025, he says, America will take control one way or another. March 2025, Vice President J.D. Vance actually visits Greenland. While there, he says, it's the policy of the United States to see changes in the island's leadership. He's basically telling Greenlanders, vote yourselves out of Denmark. December 2025, last month, Trump appoints Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry, who openly supports annexation, as special envoy to Greenland. The State Department, under Rubio's orders, commissioned an analysis of Greenland's untapped resources. They want to know exactly what's there. This, you know, isn't a joke anymore. This is a campaign. Then Venezuela happened. We get to January 3rd, 2026, the day everything changed. When Trump captured Maduro, he proved something that everyone suspected, but nobody wanted to believe. Will he actually do it? Will he use military force to achieve foreign policy goals that previous presidents only talked about? The day after Venezuela, Trump tells The Atlantic, "We do need Greenland, absolutely. We need it for defense." A reporter asks, "Does the Venezuela strike have implications for Greenland?" Trump answers, "I'll leave that up to others to decide." And then yesterday, that is the 6th of January, the White House made it official. Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt told reporters, "The president and his team are discussing a range of options to pursue this important foreign policy goal. And of course, utilizing the U.S. military is always an option at the commander-in-chief's disposal." Let that land. The White House just confirmed that invading a NATO ally is on the table. All right, so Trump says national security, His advisors say critical minerals. Let's break down what this actually means. Rare earth elements, or REEs, you know, they are a group of 17 metallic elements. And despite the name, they're not actually that rare in Earth's crust. The problem is that they are incredibly difficult to mine and process economically. But here's why they matter. These elements have unique magnetic, luminescent, and catalytic properties that make them irreplaceable in modern technology. Let me give you some examples. Your smartphone, it uses neodymium in the vibration motor and terbium in the LED screen. Electric vehicles, the motors use powerful permanent magnets made from neodymium and praseodymium. Wind turbines, each one needs hundreds of kilograms of these rare earth magnets, especially dysprosium. And here's where it gets really serious. Military systems. The F-35 jet, cruise missiles, drones, submarines, satellite systems, all of them depend on rare earth components. Without rare earths, modern military technology doesn't work, period. Now, here's the problem. China controls approximately 85% of global rare earth production and refining. 85%. That's by no means an accident. China spent decades building this dominance while Western countries were happy to outsource the dirty, polluting work of mining and processing. Now, they have what analysts call the ability to intervene in the market at all levels, from mining to processing to finished products. We saw this weaponized just this week. China banned rare earth exports to Japan after the Japanese Prime Minister made comments about Taiwan. Just one comment, and suddenly, Japan can't get the minerals it needs for its car industry. In April 2025, China imposed export controls on 7 rare earth elements to all countries. Car makers in America and Europe had to shut down factories. Prices in Europe went up to 6 times the Chinese domestic price. Now, this is what is called economic warfare. And right now, China is winning. So this is where Greenland comes in. According to the European Commission's Joint Research Center, Greenland contains 18% of global reserves for key rare earths like neodymium, praseodymium, dysprosium, and terbium. So now that's 18% in one island under ice that's now melting due to climate change. If the West can deploy these resources, it breaks China's monopoly. It secures the supply chain for the energy transition and for military technology. And the most promising project? It has a name. The Tanbreez Project, Greenland's crown jewel. This project is located in the southern Greenland town of Qaqortoq. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It might be the single most valuable mineral deposit in the Western world. The numbers, well, they're staggering. An estimated 4.7 billion tons of rare earth-bearing material. But here's what makes the Tanbreez special. It's rich in heavy rare earth elements. The HREEs that we mentioned earlier, these are the really valuable ones, the ones most needed for high-performance magnets. They make up 27% of the deposit. Most deposits are dominated by more common light rare earths. And this crucial Tanbreez has extremely low levels of uranium and thorium. So why does that matter? Because radioactive material means environmental risk and regulatory nightmares. A competing project called Quainfield was essentially killed by local opposition because of its uranium content. Tanbreez doesn't have that problem here. Now, watch how the great powers are moving on this. In 2024, the Tanbreez project was acquired by a US-based company called Critical Metals Corp. But here's the story behind the story. Both US and Danish officials had been lobbying the previous owners, lobbying them not to sell to Chinese firms. And in October 2025, reports emerged that the US government was in talks to acquire an equity stake in Critical Metals Corp. So the American government directly investing in a Greenlandic mine. This is the real game, not military invasion. Not yet anyway, but economic positioning, locking up the resources before China can. So when Trump says national security, he's not wrong. He's just not telling you the whole picture. Here's something most people don't realize. You know, the United States, they already have a major military installation in Greenland, and it's called Pituffik Space Base, though older folks might remember it as the Thule Air Base. And it's not just any other base. It's the northernmost U.S. military installation on Earth, and it might be the most strategically important piece of real estate America operates outside its own borders. So this is how the story starts. In World War II, 1941, Denmark, then occupied by Nazi Germany, signed an agreement allowing the U.S. to defend Greenland. American troops landed to prevent the Germans from using Greenland as a weather station base. But the modern base was born in the Cold War, 1951. It was constructed in secret under the codename Operation Blue Jay. What was the mission? Nuclear deterrence. You see, Greenland sits directly on the shortest flight path between the Soviet Union and the United States, the polar route. American bombers stationed at Thule could reach Soviet targets faster than anywhere else. The Soviet missiles coming from the other way would pass right over Greenland. In 1961, they built the Ballistic Missile Early Warning System, also called BMEWS, a massive radar designed to detect Soviet nuclear missiles before they hit the US. It gave America precious minutes of warning time. Today, Pituffik is operated by the United States Space Force. The 12th Space Warning Squadron is based there, and their job hasn't changed that much. Detect intercontinental ballistic missiles headed for North America. But the real threat has evolved. It's not just Russia anymore. China's nuclear arsenal, you know, it's growing. Both countries are developing hypersonic missiles that fly faster and lower than traditional ICBMs. The data from Pituffik feeds directly into NORAD. NORAD, it stands for North American Aerospace Defense Command. Without it, America's missile defense has a massive blind spot. Here's where, you know, it gets interesting for the future. The Trump administration has been talking about something called Golden Dome. It's an integrated air and missile defense system to protect the U.S. homeland. And guess where military analysts say a key component should go? Pituffik. Specifically, an over-the-horizon radar system that can detect threats even further out. And then there's one more thing. Pituffik has the only deep water seaport available for U.S. regional operations in Greenland. Now, this means ships can resupply there. It means America can project power across the entire Arctic from that single base. Here's the question. If America already has a base, already has access, already has cooperation from Denmark, why does Trump want actual control of Greenland? I can see two possible answers. One, he doesn't trust the current arrangements will last. What if Greenland becomes independent and kicks the Americans out? What if a future Danish government changes the deal? The second one is the minerals. You can't develop rare earth minerals at industrial scale just because you have a military base out there, right? You need political control, economic control. The Tanbreez project and the Pituffik Space Base are in separate stories. They're connected. Together, they form what the 2024 U.S. Defense Arctic Strategy calls a comprehensive approach, securing both economic resilience and military deterrence. Trump doesn't want just a piece of the pie. He wants the entire pie. He wants the whole package. So let's talk about Denmark, because they're in an impossible situation. On one hand, they are a NATO ally. Their defense literally depends on the United States. If Russia ever threatened Denmark, they'd need American protection. On the other hand, that same ally is now publicly threatening to take their territory. Danish officials have admitted something privately that's now becoming public. They neglected Arctic defense for too long. They relied on America, and now America is using that dependency against them. But Copenhagen, you know, they're fighting back. In 2025, they signed something called the Second Agreement on the Arctic and North Atlantic. It commits Denmark to 27.4 billion Danish krone in military investment. What are they buying? Two new Arctic-capable naval vessels, a new maritime patrol aircraft capability, and, this is significant, they're upgrading an airbase to accommodate F-35 fighter jets. Danish military told officials of CNN that they've been conducting exercises in Greenland specifically to show Trump how seriously they take its defense. They even claim Greenland's eastern coast is virtually inconquerable because of the harsh terrain and weather. But let's be real. Denmark's entire military is smaller than some U.S. National Guard units. If America decides to move, Denmark can't stop them alone. Now, this brings us to the nuclear question. What happens to NATO if America attacks a NATO member? NATO is built on Article 5. An attack on one is an attack on all. It's only been invoked once after 9/11. European soldiers went to Afghanistan because of Article 5. But the treaty never anticipated that the attacker would be a member, let alone the founder and leader of the alliance. Senator Chris Murphy was asked this directly yesterday, and his answer was, NATO countries would of course have to defend Greenland against the US if necessary. That's what Article 5 says. However, Article 5 did not anticipate that the invading country would be a member of NATO. Then he added something chilling. We're laughing, but this is not actually something to laugh about now, because I think he's increasingly serious. Yesterday, January 6th, seven European leaders, France, Germany, UK, Italy, Spain, Poland, and Denmark, they issued a joint statement. Greenland belongs to its people. It is for Denmark and Greenland, and them only, to decide on matters concerning Denmark and Greenland. And these are universal principles, and we will not stop defending them. Seven European leaders publicly rebuking the President of the United States at the same meeting where they're trying to coordinate security guarantees for Ukraine against Russia. The irony is brutal. They're begging America to help protect Ukraine from territorial aggression while America is threatening territorial aggression against Denmark. This is what analysts at Chatham House meant when they wrote that the Venezuela strike may be the moment when Western Europe realizes that the US has abandoned the core values that unite them for the past century. Now, here is a bigger context. The Arctic, you know, it's transforming from a frozen wasteland into a strategic battleground. Climate change is melting the ice. Now, that opens new shipping routes. The Northern Sea Route along Russia, the Northwest Passage through Canada. A ship going from Shanghai, say, to Rotterdam via the Arctic saves almost 5,000 kilometers compared to that of the Suez Canal. As the ice melts, it reveals resources underneath. Oil, gas, minerals, fish stocks that are moving north as waters warm. The 2024 U.S. Defense Arctic Strategy says it clearly. The Arctic is becoming a venue for strategic competition. Finland and Sweden joining NATO changed the equation. Russia's war in Ukraine intensified everything. The U.S. Defense Department, they identified Russia as the primary threat in the Arctic. Russia has been militarizing the region aggressively. Nuclear submarine patrols, new bases. They've been jamming GPS signals in Nordic countries, disrupting civil aviation, fishing boats, everything. And here's the scary part. The Arctic, you know, provides Russia with a direct avenue of approach to the U.S. homeland. Russian submarines can launch missiles from under the ice. Russian bombers can fly over the pole. The shortest path from Moscow to Washington is right over Greenland. And that's why Pituffik matters. It's watching. Now, let's talk about China. You know, China is a different kind of problem. The Pentagon calls them a pervasive threat. China isn't an Arctic state. Their nearest territory is thousands of kilometers from the Arctic Circle. But they've declared themselves as a near Arctic state, and they're pushing in. Chinese research vessels in Arctic waters, which the Western intelligence suspects, are gathering military data. Investment attempts in Greenland that were blocked. Icebreaker ships. And now, Russia and China are collaborating in the Arctic. Joint naval exercises, intelligence sharing. The U.S. calls this a threat multiplier. So you have a situation where America's two main rivals are cooperating in a region that America is increasingly worried about. And the key strategic position in that region is Greenland, which is controlled by a small European country with a tiny military. From Washington's perspective, that's a vulnerability which they want to close. All right, so you might be thinking, Nelson, this is fascinating, but I'm in Bangalore or Mumbai or Delhi. Why should I care about submarines under Arctic ice, towns and air bases in Greenland with names that I can't pronounce? Here is why. The Greenland crisis proves India's foreign policy strategy. What diplomats call multi-alignment isn't just clever. It might be the only strategy that works in this fractured new world. Think about what's happening. America is threatening its own allies. Europe is trying to build military capacity independent of the US. China is weaponizing rare earths. Russia is isolated but still dangerous. In this chaos, which majority country has maintained working relationships with all of these powers? India. We buy oil from Russia, even after sanctions. We trade with China, even while competing with them on the border. We have defense partnerships with the US, and we're founding members of BRICS. We just signed FTAs with the UAE and are negotiating with the UK and EU. Last year, India overtook Japan to become the fourth largest economy in the world. This year, India hosts a BRICS summit. Two other major summits are happening in 2026, APEC in China, G20 in the US. Three superpowers hosting global summits in 1 year. China, America, and India. That's the new world order. And only one of them is trusted by everyone. So now, let's talk about those rare earths directly. India is fast-tracking its national critical mineral mission. We have our own deposits, not as big as Greenland's, but it is still significant. As the world diversifies away from China's dependency, India becomes a critical alternative. We just became one of only two countries in the world, alongside the UK, to have a national primary standard facility for solar cell calibration. When China blocks rare earth exports, Western companies need alternatives. India can be that alternative. Not for everything, but for enough to matter. The Defense Ministry just signed a 293 crore deal for the Suryastra rocket system, Our defense exports to Europe are growing as they look for partners beyond unreliable supply chains. You know, but we have to be smart about how we navigate this. Look at how India responded to the Venezuela strike. The Ministry of External Affairs called it a matter of deep concern. That's it. No condemnation, no mention of US by name. Compare to that of Brazil calling it a flagrant violation of international law. Or, say, China. It was deeply shocked. India is walking a tightrope. We believe in sovereignty. It's a founding principle of our foreign policy. But we also need to understand the US partnership for technology, defense, and as a counterweight to China. This is the new diplomacy. Not choosing sides. Managing relationships, staying relevant to everyone while being dependent on no one. When America alienates Europe, India benefits. When China weaponizes resources, India becomes an alternative. When global trust breaks down, India's reputation for reliability becomes a strategic asset. The Greenland crisis, you know, isn't just about an Arctic island. It's proof that the old alliance system is cracking, and India positions itself for exactly this world. So before I wrap things up, I want to come back to something I mentioned at the beginning, the sovereignty paradox. Greenland wants independence. They want to stop depending on Danish subsidies. The way to do that is to develop their minerals. But to develop those minerals, they'll need massive foreign investment, the kind of investment that only comes from superpowers. So Greenland faces a choice: stay dependent on Copenhagen or trade that dependency for a new one, on Washington. The tragedy here is that 56,000 Greenlanders are trying to build their own future, but they're caught between superpowers who see their homeland as a chessboard. So what happens next? Here are four scenarios. Scenario one, economic integration without military action. The US continues investing in projects like Tanbreez. Greenland becomes economically tied to America without formal political control. Denmark maintains nominal sovereignty while losing practical influence. Scenario two, Greenland independence referendum. There's growing sentiment in Greenland for full independence. Trump could encourage this, then welcome an independent Greenland into American protection, the soft option. Scenario three, something like Venezuela, a military operation justified on some pretext, maybe protecting American assets or countering Russian influence or Chinese influence. Catastrophic for international relations, I would say, but after this week, nobody can say it's impossible. And the final scenario, prolonged tension, no resolution, years of pressure, investment battles, diplomatic friction. The uncertainty itself becomes a new normal. Here's what I want you to take away. We're living through a fundamental reshaping of global power. The rules that governed international relations since 1945, sovereignty, territorial integrity, the sanctity of alliance, they're all being tested. Greenland has become what analysts call a nexus, a place where economics, security, and sovereignty all are colliding. The decision is made in Nuuk, Copenhagen, and Washington will echo across the Arctic and beyond. And in this new world, countries that can navigate multiple relationships, that can be trusted by everyone, but captured by no one, they are the ones that will thrive. India has been preparing for this world for 70 years. Non-alignment wasn't a weakness. It was foresight. So the question is now whether we can convert that strategic position into economic and technological advantage, where we can become not just a bridge between powers, but a power ourselves. And that, my friends, is the Greenland story. The full story, from rare earth minerals to space bases, from sovereignty paradoxes to the future of NATO itself. Now, look, I know this was a long one. I went deep in today, say about 35 minutes. So if you're still here, if you're still stuck with me through rare earth chemistry and Cold War radar systems and all, thank you. I mean it. Thank you. You know, in a world of 60-second reels and hot takes, you chose to go deeper. You chose to actually understand what's happening instead of just reacting to headlines. That means a lot. That's exactly the kind of audience I make this show for. Now, if you've got value from this episode, if something clicked, if you've learned something that you didn't know, if you're going to look at your smartphone a little differently now, knowing what's inside it, I have a small request. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. Follow the show, and this is the big one. Please leave a review, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you're listening from. Here's the thing most people don't realize. Those reviews, they're not just nice words for me to read. You know, they actually tell the algorithm that this content matters, that people want to understand the world and not just scroll past it. One 5-star review, one comment, one share to a friend who you think needs to hear this. That's how independent shows like this grow. That's how we compete with the big networks and the clickbaity factories. So if Nelson John 360 has earned a spot in your rotation, please help me reach more people like you. People who want the full picture, not just the fragment. All right, that's my ask. Now go get some chai, coffee, stretch your legs. You've earned this after this marathon. I'm Nelson John. This has been the Nelson John 360 podcast. Stay curious, stay informed, and I'll see you in the next one.